Hello and welcome to the Football Fans Podcast, The Shootout, where we get a fan or a former player on the show one-on-one, a little less debate and a bit more digging into that player's career, and we get their views on the current state of the game now and what they think and what their views are of football today. We've been away for a little while. I haven't done an FFP shootout for a little while, but we are back and we have a brilliant guest on the show for this season's first FFP shootout. I'm really, really, really glad to be joined by a striker that blessed many clubs, one of whom was mine, the great Arsenal. We've got Kevin Campbell on the show. Thank you very much, Kevin, for coming on the show. One thing I want to talk, I want to ask you first of all, is about the fact, something I thought was for a while, for someone that was prominent in the first, you know, 5 to 10 years of the Premier League era, I don't think a lot of people really know much about you. I think people, you know, there's other strikers that are kind of more well known and coveted, you know, to most football fans. But those that know, but I think a lot of people, Kevin Campbell, they don't know a lot about you. And I wondered if that's because you made a conscious effort to take a back seat from the limelight and just that's kind of how you preferred it, or if you think you just got kind of swallowed up in, you know, an era where there were other top strikers as well.
I think my career path covered 3 decades. Mm-hmm. Now, I made my debut in 88, I covered the 90s, and I covered 2000s. And I think it's the changing of Football League to Premier League. Obviously, I had my time in the Premier League, but a lot of fans don't realise I've actually played for Arsenal, because a lot of fans nowadays are only kind of used to the Premier League era.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Football League era had many great teams and many great players, and it's as if those times never existed. But I think there was a lot of better teams around then and a lot of better English players around then than there are now.
Mm. Would you say
that's why I think, you know, that's people's mentality is a latest mentality as opposed to a historical mentality.
I totally understand that. I get that. Would you say that Arsenal and that time you spent at Highbury was the most enjoyable period of your professional career, or was there another club or another time that you felt you enjoyed your football the most?
Look, I was an Arsenal fan. I was an Arsenal fan since a little boy. So to be able to, one, go on the terraces and support Arsenal. Two, sign for Arsenal as a boy. Three, become a YTS at Arsenal. Four, make me debut for Arsenal. I had a fantastic time and I really enjoyed that football club, enjoyed my football at Everton as well. So, but nothing beats being a young fan and playing for your boyhood club.
I bet. And we're seeing at Arsenal a little bit of a bromance and somewhat of a partnership has been struck up currently between Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Alexandre Lacazette. And you, of course, one half of my favourite striking duos between yourself and Mr. Ian Wright. How fun was it playing with Ian Wright? I spoke to Mark Bright on another show I do, and he was speaking about their partnership at Crystal Palace and how, you know, he told me what Ian Wright was like and how his exuberance and enthusiasm just infected everyone. What was your experience of playing alongside Ian?
Well, obviously, I'll agree with Brighty, to be honest. Look, Ian Wright is a character. He's full of energy. And he loves scoring goals. Now, when he was at Palace, his Palace team never beat us. And Dave Rokos, obviously, who's no longer with us, who was such a fantastic guy, we always used to joke with Wrighty and say, you know, look, you know, we're going to whip you today and stuff. And he said, no, we used to have good banter, but he could never beat us at Arsenal. And it gave to a time where we started saying to him, well, you need to come across and join us. Then when he did come across and join us, I found myself out of the team. But it was, we were that sort of group, you know, whether you played or you didn't, it was all about the group. And I think Wrighty understood that with his characteristics and the way he was, he fitted right in. So having that camaraderie, we roomed together, after Rocky left, and that grew. We're into the same music. You know, a lot of the guys into the same music and the same culture, both from South London. It was just seamless, to be honest. And, you know, we got on so well. And it's great to see that in Aubameyang and Lacazette now. I think it's kind of a throwback feeling. And any Arsenal fan wants that, because those were really good times, having that chemistry and connection in the team.
No, I hear that. And you two are a big part of the reason why I actually supported Arsenal, because when I watched Arsenal play and there was yourself and Ian and, you know, Rocastle and I think Paul Davis, Michael Thomas, yeah. There were so many black men in that team that I could look at and relate to. And I remember one of my favourite celebrations, you guys, where I think it was Ian Wright scored and you did the bogle. And that for me was just like, I watched that and thought, my uncle does the bogle. My dad does the bogle. I could relate. And I just thought, these are guys that I can really relate. They're having fun and they're killing it. But you mentioned something really interesting there, just in your answer there, Kevin, about when Ian Wright came, you found yourself out of the team. Be honest with me. When that happened, did you slightly have any resentment towards Ian Wright, towards the fact that he came with all his exuberance and energy and enthusiasm, and, you know, he was a hot striker and he was the new kid in town, I think it was a record signing, and that was great for Arsenal, but it meant that you had now a slight issue there. Did you at any point think, listen, man, what's going on here, man? Did you ever at any point look at him sideways and think, I really wish he wasn't here?
No, not at all. And this is the funny thing about, you know, coming through the ranks at Arsenal. When you come through the ranks at Arsenal, you're taught about the club and what it means, and you are always going to be challenged, because Arsenal are always going to be looking out for the top players. And I know how good a player Ian Wright is. Mm-hmm. And adding Ian Wright to our group is only going to make our group better. Mm-hmm. But what that done for me is, I didn't go knocking on the manager's door. What I'd done is, that made me get on the training ground and get better, because I knew I had to up my game now. So that's what it does. The manager turned around to me and said that he don't think me and Ian Wright can play together because we're too much like the same player.
Yeah.
But we're not like the same player. It's just that when you play with Alan Smith needs a runner with him.
Yeah.
So that's what he was getting at. So what I then done, I said, right, I've got to start being more of a target man. So that's what I done, and I got on the training ground. I worked up being a target man. We got thrown together later on in the season, and I think it was 92, we went and we blitzed a load of teams off the pitch after that. Yeah. And that's where that real partnership came, because we were scoring goals for fun. We were having so much joy. And that's where a lot of the celebration started.
Mm-hmm. I must just let our listeners know that maybe don't know, or not from South London like me or you, or not from our culture, the bogle's a dance. It's a Jamaican dance, just to let people know.
Yeah.
It's a particular dance. So you were in the Cup Winners' Cup final. Is that correct? You played in that game?
Yes.
Right. What I want to know from you, Kevin, is, was it harder to keep your composure when 45 minutes from potentially winning a Cup Winners' Cup final, or was it harder to keep your composure when you're 45 minutes from potentially getting relegated? Which of the two of the emotions when you're on the brink of something great, or, you know, the worst possible thing, getting relegated? Which
relegated is worse?
That was
relegated is much worse.
That was a harder feeling to manage.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is, because disappointment. Look, losing a final is tough. If you're thinking about that, that's what you're thinking about. You don't want to lose, so that's what propels you to win. You know, if you're in the ascendancy, you've got to try and hold on to it, or you've got to try and score again to win. But over the course of a season, and the hits you take when you're on the brink of being relegated is much harder, because confidence isn't quite there. You know, everybody's trying to rally around, and you're trying to defeat a lot of the odds. The odds are always against you when you're in a relegation battle. Just certain things that happen that can get you over you have to find confidence from somewhere. And it might sound crazy, but that is much harder.
Okay, now I hear you. You said you mentioned earlier on that you roomed with Ian Wright once Rocky passed away. Tell us a little bit about what the craziest, maddest, funniest, weirdest, baddest thing that Ian Wright did that you remember from your time, spending that time with him, be it rooming with him, training with him. You're both South London boys, you mentioned. You might have been out and about one time. Tell us what he was like to kind of be around with on a one-to-one basis.
Well, on a one-to-one, Wright was someone who loves a laugh. He loves a laugh, and I mean, he used to ring people up on. We used to get to the team hotel, and he used to call other players in different rooms and just cuss them. You know what I mean? And they're thinking, "Righty, what are you doing?" And he just used to laugh and slam the phone down and ring someone else. You know, he was good for the group because he kept everyone on their toes.
Yeah.
I was just constantly in stitches with him.
Yeah.
And because we're both South Londoners, you know, the street talk and the slang, both from Jamaican heritage, anybody who's been in that kind of environment, you do connect in a certain way. So, you know, he was just a joy to be around and still is.
I hear you. Let's move on to England now. I don't know, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I imagine one of your big regrets was never getting an England cap. Is that something that still grates with you a little bit? Or as I mentioned at the top of the show, do you accept that there was so many top English strikers around in that era, you just put it down to, listen, you can't pick everybody? Or do you genuinely feel there was a period where you were worthy of being called up for your nation?
Well, I was called up. But I never got a cap. That's life.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing I could do about winning a cap or whatever. I was on the bench.
Mm.
But I never got a cap. That's the way life goes sometimes.
Mm.
I'm a good trivia question now. You know, I'm a good trivia question. So, look, at the time, there was a lot of good strikers around.
Yeah.
You know, I did get called. It was not as if I got ignored. I did get called up. But at the time, I just didn't get a cap.
Yeah.
So, that's life. I don't regret anything.
Yeah.
To be honest, I've done what I've done to the best of my ability, and you know, that decision rests with other people.
Let's talk a little bit about your time at Everton quickly, Kevin. I always feel that you did not get enough credit for your role in keeping Everton in the Premier League the year that you were there. I know you were also very integral in West Brom's staying in the Premier League as well, but I think you pretty much single-handedly kept Everton in the Premier League. Do you feel you don't quite get the credit and the recognition that your goals deserve? Because Everton were going down. They were definitely going down. Do you feel that you did get the requisite amount of credit?
Listen, what I will say is this. I get too much credit for it from the Evertonians, let me tell you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I do, because, you know, saying you've done it single-handedly is, I believe, a slight on the team, because the team weren't bad. The team just needed someone with experience at the top of the pitch.
Mm.
Luckily, I came back. I was experienced. You know, they had quite a very experienced team, but they were playing Francis Jefferson, Danny Cademartra at the top of the pitch, end of the pitch, who would they were too young to carry it.
Mm.
So when I came in and I started forming a partnership with Franny Jeffers, we clicked straight away. We were good defensively. We were good in midfield. We had a lot of good creative players in midfield. For me, it was fantastic. I thought, wow, look at all these players. I'm going to get some good service. We got the service. We scored the goals. I went on a purple patch scoring, I think it was 9 goals in 8 games. And luckily, we stayed up. Single-handedly, some say single-handedly. Too many people say single-handedly. Yes, I did score the majority of the goals, but it was definitely a team collective.
And I don't know if you're aware, but you're only the third black player to captain Everton. Does that sort of thing matter to you? Or does it start and end with, I was just proud to captain that club? Or do you look back and think, no, I'm actually quite proud that I was one of the first black players to captain such a big football club?
No, I was the first.
You were the first? Okay, I've got you the third, but you were the first.
I was the first, yes. Ah,
well, there you go. That's even...
And I'm very proud. I'm very proud of it because, you know, it's not a lot of people really know this. In 1988, I made my debut in the Arsenal first team at Goodison Park. And at that time in the 80s, there was quite a bit of racism going around. Mm. And, you know, there were some things said and all that kind, because we, in the team there was five black players at the time.
Yeah.
So to actually flip the script and come back, sign for the club, and then get the honour to... Because Everton are a huge club. To get the honour to captain that club and everybody be happy with it and me play my part, you know, it was a privilege to be able to do that. Mm. And I was the first, so it's always nice when you're the first.
Indeed. Just going back to the kind of partnerships as well now, Kevin. You played with some great strikers. I mentioned Ian Wright, Wayne Rooney, Duncan Ferguson, Van Hooijdonk, just to name a few. Who did you enjoy playing with the most?
I enjoy playing with, obviously I enjoy playing with Wrighty. I enjoy playing with Alan Smith when I first got into the Arsenal team. Mm. Francis Jeffers I really enjoyed playing with because he was like a young Ian Rush type. You know, he had that same body type and he kind of played on the shoulder of the defence. And I had a lot more to my game as well at the time. So, you know, I could really help him with his game. But I think the striker I kind of really enjoyed playing with most was Pierre Van Hooijdonk at Nottingham Forest, because I could, with all the things I'd learned, I could play on the shoulder of the last defender and he would like to drop off into a number 10 position. He was a very good player, very intelligent player with a absolutely monster free kick. But we had the most production of any strike force in Europe at that time. So I think that was, Pierre Van Hooijdonk was instrumental and one of my favourites, yeah.
You played in Turkey as well, Kevin. Why,
yes, I did.
Why did you move to Turkey and how did that come about?
I moved to Turkey because for some reason we just got promotion back to the Premier League and everything was going great and the club accepted a bid from a Turkish team. I didn't even know. We're supposed to be going on pre-season tour. And I got a call. We were going on a Sunday. I got a call on the Saturday to say that I won't be going because the club's accepted a bid.
Okay, cool.
That was it. So what can you... You know, the club accepted a bid. And I've been fascinated by thinking about going abroad. So I thought, let's see who it is and what it's about. So went and found out what was going on, went across to Turkey, met the chairman and the team, flew to Trabzon, which is an hour and a half from Istanbul, and I fell in love with it. And I thought, right, this'll do me. And that was it.
And that was you.
Yep.
And there was also a reported kind of big fallout between yourself and the chairman where there was a lot of quoting and misquoting going on. What happened there, Kevin? What, because, you know, I've got here in one of the papers quoting the chairman's statement is the greatest insult of my life. Nothing, no apology can heal the injury. My venture at Trabzon is finished. If permission is given for me to leave here with my pride, it'll be better. Did it end in a really bad way?
Who said that?
This
who was supposed to have said that?
This,
me.
This is what I want you to clear up, Kevin, because that's what I'm reading. And no. I want to know if that's nonsense.
Yeah, that's nonsense. Look, let me just tell you, the chairman, the Bashkan, as he's called, he was very good to me. The media in Turkey, what people have to understand is, every single day in Turkey, you have 60 to 120 press with you. And they quote you every day. You actually travel away, the press travel away with on every away game, etc.
Okay.
So the scrutiny is 10 times as much as it is in the Premier League. If you could ever imagine that.
Yeah.
The chairman was asked a question. The chairman answered the question in a slang, with a slang term in it, saying that Kevin's going to eat this team. You could look at that two ways. You could either look at it, yeah, he's going to smash this team, or he's going to eat this team. But you wouldn't say he's going to eat this team. But that's what the press done. The press spun his words, and they said that it was a racist comment, saying that calling me a cannibal, which was ludicrous, really. And my friends in the team, and I had friends in Trabzon at the time, told me, you know, this isn't what the chairman said, and I believed them. But it became an international incident. It became a serious incident, and I ended up getting suspended from the team.
Yikes. Wow.
So, but it wasn't that type of thing. I ended up coming back to Everton, which obviously worked out there. But I didn't have a problem with the club. I didn't have a problem with the chairman. I didn't have a problem with the fans. The fans were absolutely incredible. Wow. And they still are, because I still, on social media, I still interact with the fans of Trabzon up to this day. So, you know, it's an unfortunate thing that happened, but it was all media driven.
Okay. Well, good to clear that up.
Yeah.
Just a couple more, Kevin. West Brom, they've got Darren Moore as their manager now, who I know you played with when you were at West Brom. Tell me, if you do think he's going to go on to have a good career as a manager, Kevin, tell me a little bit about the qualities, having, you know him and you played with him, that you think are going to see him have a good career as a manager. And I don't just want to hear he's a nice guy. If I hear one more person say Darren Moore is the loveliest guy in football, I'm gonna kill myself, because I find it patronising that people keep putting that nice guy tag on him. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but people can't. I want to know from people, what are the qualities that are ultimately going to see him have a really good career?
One, he's honest. And if you've been rubbish, he'll tell you. Two, he's driven. He knows what he wants. And if you're not going to deliver, he's going to get someone in who can deliver. Three, he knows that club inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And Darren Moore knows, as a black coach, he's got to hit the ground running. He knows that. So he's setting up the team around him to succeed. So he's got a successful mind. He's got a successful team around him that can only really bring successful West Bromwich Albion. And that's what I would say. He is a nice guy. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But he does have the qualities. He has the toughness, and he's not afraid to make the decisions that will make change. So he's a fantastic guy, and I know he will have a good managerial career.
Do you think that he's aware of the pressure, and do you think he embraces the pressure of being a black manager? And if he is that part of the reason why you, I don't know if you want to go into management, but is that part of the reason why management didn't really appeal to you?
It's not that management didn't really appeal to me. Of course, Darren Moore understands the pressure, because when you play, you understand what the pressures are. Mm. And if you're going to manage, you understand what the pressures are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people take different paths. The path I took isn't the management path. Darren Moore, luckily, was involved under some real good managers there. So he's done his apprenticeship. He's coached at academy level. He's coached at under 18s. He's coached the 23s, and got an opportunity to go and manage the club back in the last season. And he ripped a few trees up, you know, going to Old Trafford and winning and beating Spurs at home. And he got some really good results, and, you know, everybody was pushing for him to get the job. He's proven he can do it. And it was a great thing to get. You know, and a lot of people back him. I back him, to be honest with you. And we're still friends up to this day. So, you know, I wish nothing but the best for Darren Moore, but that wasn't the choice or the path I took.
Okay. And just to finally ask you about your son, your son Tyrese. Is he still playing at Stoke, or has he moved on from Stoke?
No, he's still at Stoke.
Still at Stoke.
He's still at Stoke. He's on his third manager in 12 months.
Great, brilliant.
But, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's important for him to learn all this now, because you're having to impress one manager, then you're having to impress another manager, then you're having to impress another manager. It just goes to show that the game's always moving. The game's always moving. So, you know, he's having to learn, he's having to adjust. He's part of the first team. Next minute, he's not part of the first team. So these are all questions that get asked of a young man. He's 18 years old, who he's got a bright future. But, you know, it's not just I've made my debut and I've made it. It doesn't work like that. You always have to prove. You always have to go on the training pitch. You always have to be looking to push and learn and gain as much experience as you can, especially when you're young. Because a trust plays a huge part for a young striker, especially trying to make it.
What kind of a dad are you to him, Kevin? Are you more Chris Eubank Senior on his shoulder, there, supporting? Any word of advice, you're there. No one's going to mess around with your son. You are there. You're there, first and foremost, on his shoulder. Or are you more Nigel Benn? Are you more the opposite? Are you kind of like, you know what? I'm going to be as far away from my son as possible because he has to learn to be on his own. He knows he can call me if he needs to call me. He knows I'm there for him if he needs me to be there. But I'm not going to be at the games. I'm not going to be, you know, doing interviews with him. He needs to be on his own. Which kind of father are you in regards to your son?
Well, I'm a bit of both, to be honest. What I do, obviously I support him.
Yeah.
I'm not on his shoulder. He's a young man. He's got to do it himself. That, you know, once he goes in, he's in professional football now, so I've had my career. My career's done. Yeah. If he needs to ring me, he can ring me. I don't go to all the games, but I do support him when I can.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way. He's got to find his own path.
What do you think is the best way now for youngsters who are talented like your son to kind of fulfill in careers now? Because I'm kind of past the point, Kevin, now whereby I blame the big clubs for hoarding talent. I think the responsibility now has to be on the players. Do you feel with your son he's better off playing week in, week out, even if it's not in and amongst the best managers and best players?
Well, my son left a certain club in the Northwest to go to Stoke because of just what you mentioned. Because getting opportunities, let's put it this way, my son wouldn't have made his Premier League debut at 18 if he'd stayed at the club where he was from the age of 7.
Okay.
So that was a decision he made. He knew he wouldn't get the opportunity, no matter how many goals he scored, and he broke records at academy level.
Okay.
So, but does it make a difference if it was at another club? Who are a big name? Not necessarily, because development, you develop better with better players is the mindset. But you have to have self-belief to know that you're going to leave a certain environment to go somewhere which is a lot more difficult and perform. I think financial discipline for parents plays a part as well, because if somebody's offering things that are going to make a real difference into family's life,
change your
not
lives.
Just a player, it's going to make a real difference in a family's life. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't hold it against a family to make that move. Mm-hmm. But as the player, sometimes the player actually suffers because that decision is made that they're going to stay with this certain club, get the financial reward, but the player's talent isn't going to flourish or hit the levels. So I think what has to happen is that players have to actually go out and loan. Players have to play against men,
yeah,
and play meaningful football. And if that isn't written into the contract at these clubs, then what's the point of being at these so-called, you know, big wealthy clubs?
Yeah, I agree.
If they're not going to have these things written in, so the boys are getting exposed to be playing against men. It's hard. It's a hard one, because both ways, there's not a right or a wrong way. There's just a right decision to be made. That's all.
Sure. I ask all my guests, Kevin, final question. What's the one thing in football that grates on you? And conversely, if there's one thing in football you would change or could change to improve the game, what would it be?
I want safe standing back.
Interesting.
I want standing, because I think a lot of clubs' atmospheres suffer because of it. And at the end of the day, it's entertainment business. And when you go to grounds and everybody's sat down, and some grounds get quiet, but that old camaraderie, when I was young, I stood on the terraces, and it is so infectious when you're on the terraces. I've been to Celtic Park and seen their safe standing, and the atmosphere is electric. I believe that will propel the Premier League to another level if the safe standing was back. So having the terraces back will make a massive difference for me.
That's brilliant. Listen, Kevin, thank you very much for your time coming on the FFP Shooter, man. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks for having me on. Cheers.
Take care.